Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 422 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I really ask you to agree with me. I'm asking you to hear me out. At the end of every series, in every playoff, whether that's basketball, whether that's NHL, the picture that is painted can be lasting. And obviously there is a win-lose stake to every series. Obviously you either want to win or and don't want to lose. That's what you're fighting. But so much more gets revealed in a seven-game series or best-of-seven series. You see, obviously there's surface. There's two teams trying to get the ultimate goal to win four games and to advance to the next round. But when we watch this New York Knicks, or when we watched this New York Knicks, Philadelphia 76ers series, there was so much embedded into it. There was so much intrigue. There was so much underlining importance to this series for both teams. We're going to talk about each team and how significant it is for each team. And where I want to start is with the Knicks. The reason why a lot of people have Jalen Brunson as an MVP finalist, I don't think he's going to win. I think it's very hard for him to make ground, or obviously it's a regular season award, so it's pretty much over, but I don't think he could have made ground over Shea, over Luka, over Nikola Jokic. But one of the reasons why a lot of people have, and more than likely he received some votes for MVP, is because this is not supposed to be reality right now. When you're first or second, depending on how you shape, actually, there really should be no debate. But when your second best player, when one of your most important players goes down in Julius Randle, when OG Adonobi misses a lot of the season after he gets traded to the Knicks due to injury, and when the makeup of this team does not really resemble a team that should go deep in the playoffs or should make some noise in the playoffs, and then you essentially put the team on your back and carry them to the 2 seed. And now, as we speak, you advance past the 76ers. This is why Jalen Brunson is considered to be an MVP finalist. Or at least, I'll say this. I don't think he's going to be a finalist as far as top three, but I do think that he is going to receive votes somewhere. The question now, and I think that this is a little hyperbolic, but I understand the sentiment. I understand why people are questioning if Jalen Brunson is the greatest Knick we've ever seen. The Knicks have a long history of great players, let's say. From Walt Frazier to Patrick Ewing, Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire, Stephon Marbury. There is a lot of great players that have come through the New York Knicks. What I think people love about Jalen Brunson, and while I think a lot of people would put Jalen Brunson in that category as possibly one of the greatest Knicks of all time, is because you can see when somebody is putting a team on his back. When you look at this Knicks roster, especially the Knicks roster that is available, nothing in this roster spells second round of the playoffs outside of Jalen Brunson. Now, yes, if Julius Randle was playing, that would be a different story. But as we've seen, it kind of feels like the Knicks play better when Jalen Brunson is solo. As far as we know, and this is no disrespect to Julius Randle, but Julius Randle is one of those people that thrive with the ball in his hands. So is Jalen Brunson. That was one of the biggest issues with Jalen Brunson in Dallas. He was unable to control the show. He was unable to really show what he's capable of because you have such a ball-dominant player next to you in Luka Doncic. No disrespect to Luka, because we know how good Luka is with the ball in his hand. And there's honestly no disrespect to Jalen Brunson. Even with both of them, they made it to the Western Conference Finals. But when you look, I think it's still a little hyperbolic, and I think that it's a little too late to, or too early to tell. I'm sorry, but I understand why people say that Jalen Brunson is the best Knick ever. There's obviously a level of excitement, but I will say that he is probably the best free agent signing in Knick history. This is so important for the Knicks. I don't think there's any way, shape, or form that these Knicks make it to an NBA Finals. And we'll talk about the team that I do think will make it out of the East and will make it to the NBA Finals out the East a little later. But I don't think that the Knicks have a shot of making it to the NBA Finals. But I obviously there's a level of delusion when you talk about Knicks fans, as far as kind of like Lakers fans. They always think that they have a shot. They always think that this is their year. But what I think is different about this year than other years is when you watch the games and you see how hard Jalen Brunson plays, when you see how hard this team plays, when you see how hard Josh Hart plays, or Dante DiVincenzo, or Mitchell Robinson. I think that there's a level of respect and excitement to this team, even if they don't make it. Because obviously there's Knicks fans that always get upset when they, you know, fall short of winning it all, or even making it to a second round. But this team is different. And it's because they have found their perfect point guard in Jalen Brunson, which I think is also hilarious. Because remember, obviously it's been talked about and obviously it's been brought to light how many people were so against this Jaylen Brown, not just free agent signing, but the contract that he got. And there was a lot of people, and I was probably one of those people that thought it may be smarter to go with Donovan Mitchell, because at the time, and you can even still argue to this day, Donovan Mitchell might be better than Jalen Brunson. Actually, I think the argument is a little bit, maybe you can't argue it today, seeing as though the Knicks did beat the Cavaliers last year. And the Cavaliers, I mean, as we speak, I don't know what's going to happen or what's happening. Or I don't know what happened in the Cavaliers Magic series, but I don't. Donovan Mitchell hasn't been great. There's just a level of excitement around these Knicks, and there's a level of connectivity. There's a level of understanding that the Knicks team have with New York. I'm not from New York. I don't live in New York. But when you hear people talk about Jalen Brunson, they talk about him like he's family. And I think that that is what these Knicks have been missing. Probably since Carmelo Anthony. And even in that, a lot of Knicks fans were upset with Carmelo Anthony because of how much it took to get him and how much they had to give up. But I do have to talk about this as well. And this is one of the biggest reasons why I have said constantly throughout this opening that I don't think the Knicks have a shot to make it to the NBA Finals. Not just because I think that there is a team out there that is obviously clearly better. This series, the Knicks 76ers series, should not have gone six games. Yes, on paper, the 76ers have the best player. Yes, on paper, the 76ers are no scrubs. But at best, this series should have went five games. And that is the concern that I kind of have. Oh, I'm sorry. That is the concern that I kind of have with this Knicks team. They have trouble finishing games. They have trouble finishing games cleanly. Now that is sort of a sign of, you know, youth, sort of a sign of a talent gap. And don't get me wrong, all these people are talented, but when you look, I talked about this last episode or maybe two episodes ago. The Knicks have thrived in winning moments. The Knicks have thrived in the last, you know, crunch time. Crunch time, most of these games are won because of the Knicks capitalizing in crunch time. Well, they usually have been getting dominated. I'm not going to say dominated, but they have. The 76ers, in my opinion, were the better team. They just weren't the better team in crunch time. And we saw that in almost every single win that the Knicks got. Even game six, the Knicks were up like 20 points. Got hawked down by the 76ers. Had a 10-point deficit. And then it kept going back and forth until the end. And even in the end, the Knicks only won 118 to 115. I just feel like the killer instinct is there with Jalen Brunson, I'm sorry, but it's not really there with the entire team, and you kind of feel that. But I'm not here poo-pooing on the Knicks. I think that the Knicks have been incredible, and I think that they have found their point guard of the future, and they have. That's why I say fit matters a lot. They have found their fit. They have found their perfect player in Jalen Brunson. The player that, when he came to the team, was met with a lot of criticism, surprisingly. Now he's leading this team to possibly he has so far, let's say, led this team to a second round. Let's talk about the 76ers for a second. Because this is the fear that you have. This is the reason why a lot of people would not have done what Joel Embiid did. Yes, Joel Embiid did have a 50-point game in this series. And yes, Joel Embiid, to his credit, was as good as he could have been due to, you know, seeing the circumstances that he was allotted. But when I talk about Kevin Durant and I talk about him getting swept to Minnesota and we talk about his legacy, this is the fear that people have. This is yet another. Again, I understand that the circumstances were different for Joel Embiid. He was injured. Now, that should show you how good he is, seeing as though he was not even close to 100%, still putting up 50-point games and 30-plus point games. But he was injured. He should not have been out there. But that doesn't matter when you make the decision to go out there and play. Now it's on your jacket that this is yet another year that Joel Embiid and the 76ers cannot get it done. Again, I said the 76ers were the better team throughout the duration of most of these games. The only time where the Knicks rose to occasion and the 76ers really faltered was in crunch time most of these games. There is a stigma now, and there is a narrative that Joel Embiid is kind of fueling. And that narrative is your best player cannot be a center, and you have championship aspirations. The reason why it's such a complicated narrative, because on one side you have a player that is fueling the narrative in Joel Embiid, and you have a player on the other side that is completely shattering that narrative, and that is Nikola Jokic. You have Tyrese Maxey getting 40-point games. For some reason, I don't know what the hell was going on with Buddy Hield until game six when he just went crazy. But this is the issue. This is why you see a lot of people were saying, yo, Joel Embiid probably shouldn't come back. Because even if he does come back, they didn't have a shot. As a total team, I think that you can argue that the Sixers had the two best players in this series. That's a lie. Had two of the three best players of this series in Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey. Yet and still, they got bounced out in six. This is yet another example of why or how legacy gets built, how legacy grows and shrinks. Because now this is yet another summer of talking points of how Joel Embiid has yet to get it done. Yes, I understand that injuries do play a part, but that's yet another narrative to this story. Joel Embiid has a tough time staying healthy. And I will say that some of those playoff endings, he was healthy. He was healthy against the Atlanta Hawks when Ben Simmons forgot how to play basketball. He was healthy against the Toronto Raptors when Kawhi Leonard hit the shot. But there's not going to be a Joel Embiid legacy asterisk. What they're going to say is, at least to this point, Joel Embiid has been one of the best centers in the league. He has been one of the best scoring centers the league has ever seen. But with this picture also comes, this is yet another year where Joel Embiid, who is by far the best center in the East and probably the second best center in basketball, this is yet another year where he has yet to even touch the conference finals. And this is yet another year that was riddled by injury. I mean, Joel Embiid lost an MVP this year because of injury. And now you can say he's going home or he's staying at home, seeing as though game six was in Philadelphia, because he could not overcome his team's deficiencies. And that's kind of where I want to go next, is this team. You see, the reason why Nikola Jokic has been able to show off his greatness is because he's had a great team. When you look at this Denver Nuggets team, they are great. From Jamal Murray, from Aaron Gordon, from KCP, from Michael Porter Jr. They play their role. Those aren't individually, outside of probably Jamal Murray, who, by the way, has not even made an all-star team, they're not individually stars. They're not really individually great outside of maybe Jamal Murray. But when you bring all those pieces together alongside Nikola Jokic, that makes them, they play their role perfect. Which allows Nikola Jokic to play his role perfectly. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the play of those players is the only reason why Nikola Jokic is considered a great center. I'm saying the greatness of Nikola Jokic, along with them playing their role, allows them to do what they do best. We talked about this last episode with the Phoenix Suns. Roster construction is important. If you don't have proper roster construction, I don't care who you are. Basketball, you can be the greatest player. You can be the best player. But if you don't have a good roster, it only takes you so far. Case and point, LeBron James, when he was on the Cavs, his first time. LeBron James' greatness got them to the NBA Finals. But for that year, that's how far his greatness could have got him, because they got swept by the Spurs because the Spurs were a better team, and they also had an all-time player in Tim Duncan. There has never been a team in, or there has never been a player in NBA history to take a trash team to the finals and ultimately win. There is going to be a point where your team has to come together and your team has to be good. This 76ers team, when you look at the construction of the team, they're not that good outside of two players. Yo, one of the Tobias Harris had 0 points. Only took 2 shots in 29 minutes. From games 1 to game 6 or 5, Buddy Hield was a no-show. I think he had 7 points total going into game 6. And Buddy Hield was their big acquisition at the trade deadline, I believe. Kelly Oubre was consistent, but we know who Kelly Oubre is. He's a Kelly Oubre is a smaller version of Josh Smith. His highs are extremely high. His lows are extremely low. At some point, something's going to have to give with the 76ers. Because let's not get it twisted. The 76ers were a good team because they had an all-time player in Joel Embiid, and they had the most improved player in the league this year was in Tyrese Maxey. Outside of that, that's the reason why when Joel Embiid went out, the 76ers plummeted. They went from like the 2 seed to, or the 2 or 3 seed to fighting to get into the playoffs. They're a 7 seed. Meaning they were in the play-in. All this is true. But I'm circling back to Joel Embiid. People aren't going to care. This whole right now 24-minute conversation is not going to be had. It's not going to be talked about by the masses when we talk about Joel Embiid's legacy. Right now, Joel Embiid's legacy is he's an incredible, incredible offensive weapon. Actually, he's an incredible center, both offensively and defensively. However, he hasn't seen the same amount of success that his talent should warrant. Because when you look at Joel Embiid, what does he have? He has scoring titles and he has what? An MVP. That's it. He has not even seen a conference finals. I'm not even talking about NBA finals. I'm saying a conference finals. Being probably the best or second best player in the conference, he has not seen a conference finals. Everything I said about this team, about the fact that Tobias Harris was literally doing sprints out there, the fact that Tyrese Maxey was going off until he wasn't, the fact of Buddy Hield was a no-show for five of the six games, the fact that Paul Reed, I completely forgot he was on this team, the fact that the New York Knicks were hunting Kelly Oubre. And the New York Knicks, that their center was Isaiah Hartenstein. And no offense to him, but no, Isaiah Hartenstein is not Joel Embiid. This is yet another year where the 76ers gets bounced before making the conference finals to a team that, if we're being honest, you probably should have beat. But shoulda, woulda, coulda doesn't really apply here, saying as though you didn't do it. So congratulations to the Knicks. And this is yet another offseason where 76ers have more questions than answers. Let's move over to the Pacers and Bucks series. The Pacers do what they do best. Or let me say this. The Pacers won this series because they capitalize on what they do best. I know that that is such an obvious statement, but it's true. What have we been saying about the Pacers all year? The Pacers, when they're on, when that switch is flipped, they are one of the best offensive teams in the league. When you have an offense that's run by Tyrese Halliburton, when you have now a really good player and a really good wing in Pascal Siakam, and you have a big that can stretch the floor, both shooting and play defense, like Miles Turner, you have a good shot. And because it's such a young team, they just run. And they will put points on you in a bunch. We also say that the Pacers don't really play defense that much, and that is true. We saw that in clear form, in HD, against the Bucks. But they were able to overcome because of how good Tyrese Halliburton is and because of how good Pascal Siakam is. And quiet as it's kept, those two players were by far the best players of this series. They were able to overcome a Bucks team that had so much more expectations attached to them than the Pacers did. And we'll talk about that in a second. But what I kind of want to talk about the Pacers is what our expectations should be now. And I remember I said going into the season, every team, every player has a goal. Now, obviously, the overarching goal is to win a championship. From the Spurs to the Golden State Warriors to the Thunder to the Clippers, every single team's goal going into the season is to try to win a championship. Now, it's very early on for a lot of teams to understand, okay, maybe we're not going to hit those goals. And I look at this Pacers team and I think, even if they lose to the Knicks in the second round, I think it's a successful year for them. Again, who had the Pacers doing anything? Especially the Pacers team that gave up Buddy Hield, who was their second best player. best player for a lot of the, you know, for a lot of the games. But when you have Rick Carlisle, who was kind of respectfully kicked out of Dallas, this is kind of like a redemption tour for him. Tyrese Haliburton, who a lot of people thinks is kind of overrated. This was an incredible, incredible series win for the Pacers. And I say that knowing everything that went on with the Bucks, which we'll talk about in a second. But it's about capitalizing moments. Even with everything going on with the Bucks, there was still an opportunity for the Pacers to lose the series, and they didn't. And I also I'm not saying that this is ultimately going to win anyone a championship, but what is beautiful to see is how this year, more than ever, systematic norms that we're used to with the NBA playoffs is getting debunked. Remember, youth doesn't succeed in the playoffs. When you look at the history of champions, when you look at the history of just teams that advance in the playoffs, it's usually not youth. It's usually veteran-laden teams that know how to play in the playoffs, that know how to know the intensity that playoffs bring, know the importance of moments that playoffs bring. They're usually the ones that succeed, not teams that are led by young players, first-time playoff players, players that's not even 25. This year, more than ever, we're seeing that change. Whether we talk about the Thunder, whether we talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, whether we talk about now the Indiana Pacers. And it's great to see. This has been, yes, there's been a bunch of blowouts, but this has been a fun playoff to watch. Because, again, we're seeing something. Now, yes, there are still veteran-laden teams. Like, you still have the Celtics. You still have the Nuggets, who are kind of looked as the two teams that more than likely will make it to the finals if everything goes the way they're supposed to go, but or if everything goes the way that people assume they will go. But yeah, man. The Pacers have been incredible. They have been exactly as advertised. An incredible offensive team, one of the best offensive team, if not the best offensive team in basketball, when we talk about percentage and pace and everything, but also not a good defensive team. But all that doesn't matter now, because they essentially beat the Milwaukee Bucks, and they find themselves in the second round against the New York Knicks. Both teams you can kind of consider are two of the hottest teams in the playoffs right now, seeing as though they just came off of playoff wins. So shouts out to Tyrese Haliburton. Shouts out to Miles Turner. Shouts out to Pascal Siakam. And shouts out to that Indianapolis team for beating the Milwaukee Bucks. Now let's talk about those Milwaukee Bucks now. Let's settle up and go on this Milwaukee Bucks journey. Twitter is an incredible place, or X or whatever it's called now, is an incredible place. It's an incredible place because it allows people to get their think pieces off. Now, it's up to you to read and to listen and to take heed of what people think or what people feel or people's opinions. It's up to you to gauge that. And what Twitter and X does, or X, what it does is it allows you to have a platform to give your opinion and your viewpoints on a lot of things and share it with the world. Freedom of speech is a beautiful thing. I think when used correctly, it's a very powerful thing. And I think everyone has an opinion. What I think people get confused is just because everyone has an opinion doesn't mean that their opinion is important to others. But that doesn't mean that their opinion isn't important. You know, I feel like I'm going on a tangent, but let me get back to it. Seeing as though the two teams that had the loudest off seasons as far as trades, player acquisitions, was the Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks. Phoenix Suns getting Bradley Beal from Washington. Milwaukee Bucks getting Damian Lillard from the Pacers. And the conversation on Twitter, on X, is which team is more of a disappointment? Seeing as though both teams that had the loudest offseason when we talk about acquiring players, the Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks, both teams are out the playoffs in round one. In fact, both teams combined only won two games, and both of those games were won by the Milwaukee Bucks. I talked about this last episode. Sometimes reality hurts. Sometimes a lot of people want to live in fantasy because they don't want to face what reality is. Because reality, in more times than not in these scenarios, reality isn't comfortable, isn't what it's what they want it to look like. The reality is, since 2001, the Bucks have been one of the most disappointing teams when it comes to the playoffs in the NBA. Now, obviously, in 2021, they won a championship. They beat the Phoenix Suns in the championship. Giannis Antetokounmpo, probably one of his best years, won finals MVP. But since then, they have had epic collapses in the playoffs. And the same energy that I'm giving Joel Embiid, I have to give to Giannis Antetokounmpo. Play style is important. Everyone has a different play style. And what makes you great is your play style. But this is the second year in a row that Giannis missed games. I mean, this one, he missed the entire series. Missed games due to injury. Obviously, last year he missed games against the Miami Heat, and when he came back, he was really unable to find his rhythm or his confidence at that. Chris Middleton has battled injury. I think 2022, they lost that series because they didn't have Chris Middleton. Injuries always play a part in health always plays a part in who wins a championship. There's a reason why a lot of people are questioning the Boston Celtics, who we'll talk about a little bit later. They're questioning the Boston Celtics now because of the health of Kristaps Porzingis. I'm almost sure I don't wish that upon anybody, but I'm almost sure if, you know, Nikola Jokic was out, the Nuggets would not be where they are. If Anthony Edwards was out, the Timberwolves would not be where they are. If Jalen Brunson was out, the Knicks would not be where they are. health plays an important part in team success. And that is starting to be the story with this Milwaukee Bucks team since 2021. They have not been able to be healthy in the most important times, and that obviously is the playoffs. But the question is, who is the most disappointing team between the Suns and the Bucks? Now, obviously, the answer is the Suns, in my opinion, seeing as though not only did they get swept, they got swept and was completely healthy. The Bucks weren't. But the Bucks are kind of a cautionary tale. The Suns are as well. We talked about the Suns last episode, so I'm not going to harp on them. But the Bucks are kind of a cautionary tale. You see, when you get a player as big, pause, game-wise, as Damian Lillard, and when you get a player as important, when you get a player as good as Damian Lillard, you have to give up something. Unless he's just a free agent, you usually have to give up something. I'm not saying that when perfectly healthy, the Bucks can't win a championship. I'm not saying that when perfectly healthy, the Bucks shouldn't be considered as a championship caliber team. But Damian Lillard, what this Bucks team shows you is just because you have the pieces, you still have to make the right moves. Just because you have the names, you still have to make the right moves. Because if you don't, and then something unforeseen happens, i.e. a Giannis Antetokounmpo hamstring injury, i.e. a Damian Lillard calf injury, then, you know, you find yourself in a position that you shouldn't be in. Like the fact that you're paying three head coaches at the same time and you only have one. And that one head coach has not shown the propensity, has not shown the ability to coach offensive-minded guards. But Giannis' injury saved the criticism that could have gone Doc Rivers' way. Again, I think you have to weigh out the risk plus reward when you get a player like Damian Lillard. Because obviously the reward is you have two players that are on the NBA 75 team, meaning that their contemporaries look at them as two of the 75 greatest players to ever play the game of basketball. That status alone, that title alone, should bring some type of championship caliber expectation. But you have to weigh out the risk and reward. It is getting Damian Lillard. And don't get me wrong, man. I understand that the biggest issue that the Bucks found themselves having is they struggle mightily in half court situations, especially when you see, you know, Chris Middleton's injuries, and at the time Jrue Holiday wasn't the best. I mean, he was great, but he wasn't the best scorer. But you give up a Jrue Holiday to get a Damian Lillard. And Jrue Holiday is a much better defender, and people don't understand how much the connection defensively that Jrue Holiday and Giannis had helped this team as a whole. And the more that this season went on, the less shocked that I am that we're at this moment. I'm a little shocked that the Bucks didn't make it out the first round. That's a little shocking, but I'm not shocked that they essentially didn't make it to the NBA Finals. Because losing Jrue Holiday, losing Grayson Allen is a lot for this team. You lose two players that have a defensive mindset. There's a difference between playing defense and having a defensive mindset. Damian Lillard can play defense. He just doesn't have a defensive mindset. He has a score-first mindset. And obviously, that helped in the area of scoring, but then again, did it? I think we've seen the last of Chris Middleton in a Bucks jersey, which is probably why he was so visibly emotional at the end of the game, because I think he feels it too. I think injuries really played a part in how this negotiation is going to go with him and the Bucks, even though he was their healthiest player going into this series, shockingly. The Bucks are, when you make a move like Damian Lillard and it doesn't work out, you rapidly speed up change. Change is going to come for this Bucks team. You have Patrick Beverley throwing the ball twice at a fan, then kicking out a reporter because she doesn't subscribe to his podcast. Yo, there is going to be major changes in Milwaukee. And when you see what other teams in the East are looking like and you see what the West looks like, it's kind of like how I feel in a certain instance about the Baltimore Ravens this year. I felt like when the stars align your way, you have to capitalize because they may never align again. And they were unable to get it done. I think that if there was a year to get it done for the Milwaukee Bucks, it was this year. Because I don't know. You're losing, more likely you're going to lose Chris Middleton. I don't know how you get much better. There's not too many free agents that fit with Giannis and that fit with Dame that will really put you over the top. Oh. Yeah, man, it sucks. It sucks. But this is why you can't rest on names and you can't rest on your laurels. You can't rest on, oh, we have Dame, we have Giannis. That shows you how dependent this team is with Giannis. Giannis didn't play this series and they got bounced out in six. And the only reason why they got bounced out in six is because Damian Lillard went crazy one of them games. I think game one. He went crazy in the first half. And he went out. And I think games five, Chris Middleton went crazy. He had like 40, didn't he? 46. And we talk about legacy. And we talked about Joel Embiid. Well, this is yet another year that Giannis wasn't 100% at the end of the year. And as great as Giannis is, as much as we heap praise about how physically dominant he is, and no matter where you rank him as far as top players in the league, there is an argument that can be had that his play style is not cohesive for longevity in the league. I don't think people understand. That's why a jump shot is so important. Yes, a jump shot essentially puts another bullet in your arsenal, and it allows you to score a different way, but it also extends the life of your career so you don't have to bump and bruise down in the paint. That's why you see a lot of players that are shooters play as long as, like a Ray Allen, like a Kyle Korver, like a J.J. Redick, more than likely like a Steph Curry. That's why shooters usually last longer, because their body doesn't take that bumping and bruising. Giannis is devoid of shooting. In fact, his entire game is literally north and south. And I'm not saying that it, you know, change your game and don't do that anymore. I'm just saying add pieces. Because when you are a north-south player and you hurt your hamstring, your dominant hamstring at that, it's curtains for that. That's why when that happened, and then it said that he hurt, I think, his left hamstring, which is the hamstring that you jump off of, I was almost sure we're not seeing Giannis again this year because of how he plays. Now, if he was a shooter, maybe different, but no. Now, I'm not saying Giannis is trash or anything. I'm just saying I don't want to turn this into I told you so. I'm not here to gloat. I'm not here to brag. What I'm here to do is show the difference between a dominant team and a team that has more questions than answers. Kind of like I said with the Lakers and Nuggets series, there should have been no one that thought the Miami Heat were going to beat the Boston Celtics in this series. It goes back to regular season habits. The Celtics built championship habits in the regular season. Whether we talk about the acquisitions, getting Jrue Holiday, getting Kristaps Porzingis. Whether we talk about their two best players being their two best players in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And just getting a myriad of production from everywhere on the roster, from Al Horford, from Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard. There was not a wasted motion when talking about this Boston Celtics team. And the dominance that you would probably expect is what we saw in this playoffs. Now, I talked about it earlier, but there is a level of concern moving forward as far as Kristaps Porzingis' health. I will say that they can make it to the NBA Finals without Kristaps Porzingis, especially when you see, obviously, the East is weaker than the West when you talk about competition, but I don't see them being able to win a championship without Kristaps Porzingis. I'll just say that. But we're not looking that far right now. But everything about the Boston Celtics this entire year we should have known what was going to happen in this series. Again, a lot of the things that we saw, a lot of the viewpoints, a lot of the predictions that we had coming in, well, about this series, half of it was about what we saw this year from the Celtics. Half of it was about what we've seen in previous years from the Heat. In that aura that the Heat have had and have built over the years, but a lot of people were not looking at what they saw this year. They were looking at the allure of playoff Jimmy Butler, or the allure of, well, they've went to the finals two of the last three or two of the last 5 years or something. Exactly how I thought the Celtics would play is exactly how they played. And congratulations to them. Because they did exactly what I thought they would do. But this series is more about the Heat than the Celtics. Not saying that the Heat lost the Celtics more than the Heat won. I'm not saying. Or the Heat lost the Celtics. Whoa, the Heat lost the series more than the Celtics won. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this was a sneaky, important series for the Heat. There's a lot of opportunity for change. There's a lot of opportunity for transition with this Heat team going into the offseason now. With Jimmy Butler, with some of their key pieces like Caleb Martin. Like, what do you... You know what I think happened? I think last year did irreparable damage to the Miami Heat. And I think the bubble did irreparable damage to this Miami Heat team. What it did was it gave them a false view of themselves. Yes, Jimmy Butler plays better in the postseason than he does in the regular season. That is a fact. Yes, Bam Adebayo is a very good player. That is a fact. Yes, Eric Spoelstra is one of, if not the best coach in basketball. That is a fact. But everything else. Let's just take everything that we've seen, man. And let's be honest about it. It's very hard for Heat fans. It's very hard for the Heat culture. Let's be honest about it. This Heat, just because they went on an incredible run last year, and they went on an incredible run the year before to make it to the conference finals, and they went on an incredible run in the bubble, this team has never been a championship caliber team. They've been good, and they capitalize on situations. They have never been a championship caliber team. Again, the things that are true is Jimmy Butler is an incredible player in the playoffs, and he's an incredible player all overall, but there is a level of Jimmy Butler regular season and Jimmy Butler playoffs. Yes, Bam Adebayo is a good player that can be a cornerstone for a team. And yes, Eric Spoelstra is a great coach, and Pat Riley is a great owner, or great GM, I'm sorry. But this team was never a championship caliber team, and they were moving like they were one. Not really making a lot of offseason moves, retaining and keeping players that they should have got up out of there, depending on players that are non or undrafted players, like a lot of them. And now you look up. Jimmy Butler might be gone because I think he's looking for a max extension. At least that's what's been reported. And majority of this team are all free agents. So who do you bring back? Who do you get? You see, that's why I thought it was so shocking to me. When every single time You heard a big name player that was potentially set to go to Miami, whether that's Damian Lillard, whether that's Bradley Beal. There was something that always got in the way. And that's something 9 times out of 10 was Miami, whether that's they didn't want to include Tyler Herro in a deal. Let me ask you a question. I understand that Bradley Beal played like dog crap for the Suns in the playoffs, but who do you think would have been more important for the Suns team? Tyler Herro or Bradley Beal? Or they potentially had Damian Lillard and they didn't want to put Tyler Herro or Caleb Martin in a deal? Who do you think would have been a little bit more important? Especially seeing Jimmy Butler was out. Tyler Herro and Caleb Martin, who Caleb Martin is a free agent at this point, or Damian Lillard. You see, we praise the Heat for their quote-unquote culture that they built. But what if that culture has got them to the finish line, but that culture has never had them finish. LeBron James got them to the finish line and finished. D. Wade, Chris Bosh, all-time players. But what happens when you don't have all-time players? Remember, they had Shaq as well. But what happens when you don't have all-time players? And what happens when you really have to be build a team? If your goal is to just make it to the NBA Finals, then kudos to you, man. I understand that there are some teams like my Lonely Wizards that don't really make it all the time. So if your goal is to be in the competition of making the finals but not ultimately winning, because think about it. I'm looking at this bracket right now, right? I would not, even if they did miraculously make a run like they did last year to the finals, I'm not picking the Heat over the Thunder, over the Clippers, over the Magic, over the Timberwolves, or the Nuggets. And I'm for damn sure not picking them over the Celtics, which obviously they couldn't even win more than one game. I know the argument, and that is why I said there's been irreparable damage to the psyche of this fan base, to the psyche of this team. Because there is a sector of people that are going to say, hey, if we had Jimmy Butler, if we had Terry Rozier, if we had Josh Richardson, we could have beat the Celtics. And I'm here to break the news to you. You could have had all of them. You would have lost to the Celtics team. Because the Celtics built championship habits throughout the regular season. While the Heat, who I think started 36 different starting lineups, did not. It's going to be a tough, in my opinion, tough offseason for the Heat. Because there's a very good possibility that not only Jimmy Butler doesn't return, or Jimmy Butler doesn't stay, or Jimmy Butler's gone, but this team is going to look like Bam Adebayo and a bunch of I don't know. And all of that could have been avoided if they made the right decisions, if they didn't rest on that championship caliber that they honestly don't have. And if you want to be real here, the Heat culture is built off of star players playing like stars, i.e. D. Wade, Shaq, LeBron, Chris Bosh. And now you look up. If you would have made the right moves, you could have had Bradley Beal. You could have had Damian Lillard. And you could have figured something out. Now, you're probably going to have Bam Adebayo and a bunch of question marks. But hey, Heat culture. Well, when heat culture runs up to a championship culture that was built, I understand the Celtics made it to a championship, made it to conference finals, didn't win, but they've been building. So now you look, there is not a team in the East that I think has a shot in hell of beating the Celtics because of what they've built. What the Heat have built is a team that is inadequate to compete with the top team. Because again, the Heat, this is the second year in a row that the Heat find themselves in the play-in. So, I don't know. Congratulations to the Celtics, and I guess we'll see what happens with the Heat. I want to move off of basketball. Now, I understand when I'm recording this, the Cavaliers Magic game hasn't happened. That's why I haven't talked about that series. Neither has Game 6 of the Clippers and Mavericks series hasn't happened. If obviously the Mavericks close them out, I'm talk about it on Wednesday's episode. If the Cleveland Cavaliers close it out, I'll talk about, you know, that's why I haven't talked about today. I want to talk about Odell Beckham Jr. for a second. And I want to talk about a player's life expectancy in their respected sport and how it's not that long. And I'm not talking about life or death. I'm talking about their life, their sports life expectancy. We have to, I think we've done it actually. I think it's an Odell Beckham thing at this point. I think fans, I think NFL circles, I think people understand that Odell Beckham Jr. is not the Odell Beckham Jr. of old. The Odell Beckham Jr. that you're getting is not the one-hand catch Odell Beckham, is not the Giants Odell Beckham Jr. You're getting a older body, you know, due to injuries, and an older Odell Beckham Jr. And I think and it really hit me when we heard the news about Miami. Odell Beckham Jr. signs a 1-year, $3 million deal with Miami. And there was not an ounce of me that thought that this was a game-changing move. That's where we're at with Odell Beckham Jr. Because in my opinion, and I understand that the systems and offenses are different, but in my opinion, if you couldn't work or if it didn't work or you didn't get the best Odell Beckham Jr. in Baltimore, which you were needed more. Now, again, I understand schemes are different. I understand playbook is different. I understand opportunity is different. But you're essentially the third option again. Well, third option. Maybe fourth on a team. I mean, this is it is congratulations that he's playing as long as he wants, and obviously he's hopefully controlling his NFL career. But I thought that Odell Beckham Jr. was still a player that can dictate the fortune of a team. I thought him going to Baltimore was a surefire championship or Super Bowl for Baltimore, along with that defense, along with, you know, some of the other weapons that you had on the offensive side of the ball. And having Lamar Jackson and his second MVP. But watching Odell Beckham Jr. and seeing his inability to really create space on a regular basis now, I think he can still play for a good number of years, but I think gone are the days where Odell Beckham Jr. is a needle changer, needle mover. So, congratulations to Odell Beckham Jr. For signing a 1-year deal. And my thing is, I know systems are different. I know he really wanted to go to the Chiefs, but you're telling me you couldn't get $1 million or $3 million for 1 year for Baltimore? And now you have another piece? Because remember, Baltimore, who was a run-first team, their running game was decimated with injury again. Yes, Gus Edwards was good, but you have a much increased running back in Derrick Henry now. So, I don't know, man. But I know it sounds like hate. This is just me talking about or unveiling my views of Odell Beckham Jr. now. But I am happy that he's still playing, if that's because that's what he wants to do. And I just don't think Odell Beckham Jr.'s presence is that much of a needle mover at this point. So, you know. Lastly, before we go, I want to talk about something. Let's get off sports. I haven't done this in a while. Obviously, we are knee deep in a face off, I guess you can say, between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. And I want to answer the question. I think this question is a straightforward question that has a very subjective answer. And that is, what makes a diss track successful? What makes a diss track hit? Now, we've seen some incredible diss tracks throughout the years, whether we're talking about No Vaseline, which is probably one of the greatest diss tracks of all time by Ice Cube, whether we talk about Hit 'Em Up from Tupac, which is arguably the greatest diss track of all time, whether we talk about Back to Back from Drake, dissing dissing Meek Mill. And now these diss tracks that were getting push ups from Drake. You got 6:16 a.m. in L.A., the diss that just dropped. You also have Euphoria, which is the Kendrick Lamar responses. Hell, even though we deleted it, you even have 7-minute drill by J. Cole. Obviously, a diss track is a track, is a song. And there are different layers to how to make a song successful. You know, there are certain things that songs need. You know, it needs a good beat. It needs a hard beat. It needs it needs cohesiveness. It needs to be structured as a good song. But a diss is different from a regular song. While all the components of a regular song is important, the most important thing for a diss track lives in a different realm. It's kind of like It's kind of like it's kind of like the woods. You have a beautiful land, and you have them dark woods over there. That's what a diss track is. While it's still an important piece of the land, you just don't venture over there. I think a successful diss, right? I think the most important aspect of a diss is whoever you're dissing. Your diss track makes the audience look at the target differently. I think if you're able to make a diss and you make the audience question what you're looking at from the target of the diss track, it is successful. No Vaseline had us look at NWA or the other members of NWA drastically different. Hit 'em Up had us look at Biggie drastically different. Back to Back had us look at Meek Mill's drastically different. So the story of Adonis had us look at Drake drastically different. I'm a fan of music. I'm a fan of both Kendrick Lamar. I'm a fan of Drake. I'm also a fan of J. Cole. So for people who's like, there's no big three, I don't subscribe to that. But the reason why, at least to this point, if we want to talk about a winners and losers, if you want to talk about a who's up in the score, the reason why I would say that Kendrick is probably up in the score, because Kendrick is not the one to go lightly on a diss. We've seen some of his shots at Big Sean. We've seen some of his shots at other people. But when you drop a 6.5-minute track and never take your eye off the target, which is Drake, and now you have people looking at Drake differently, and then you go back to back, no pun intended, and drop 6:16 a.m. in L.A., you're not playing games, brother. And now what his diss tracks are doing successfully is making people look at Drake differently. Now, obviously, there are people that are always going to love Drake and always going to think Drake is untouchable. And for those people, shouts out to them. But for Kendrick fans and for neutral fans, I think that's what it is. Diss track, you're not getting at the other fan base, because you will never win the other fan base. It's always your fan base and the neutral fans. The neutral fans is who diss tracks should target, or who is you can see the effect of a diss track. And neutral fans are starting to look at Drake a little different. And I'm a neutral fan, and I'm starting to look at you, because what I do is I play it in sequence. You know, I play Push Ups, which is a good track. Don't get me wrong, I play Push Ups, and then you play Push Ups, and then play Euphoria right after, and then play 6:16 a.m. in L.A. That's a tough one. It's hard to compare. I'm a fan of peace, but I'm also a fan of music. And in the hip hop culture, diss tracks, dissing each other has always been a part of the culture. I hope that it never gets above the music and never goes further than the music. Because at the end of the day, it's just music. Just like LeBron said, it's just basketball. It's just music. And I never want to see anything go further than that, you know. But there are certain people that you don't bark up the tree, and Drake might be that type of person, because again, we have not heard the response. But I will say that this is probably the most pointed responses I have ever heard from Kendrick Lamar, back to back, no pun intended. And it doesn't seem like this is a tree that you want to bark up. And like I said, in my opinion, the most successful diss tracks are the diss tracks that make your target or make the audience look at your target differently. And I think that's exactly what's happening with this Kendrick Lamar Drake beef diss off. It's crazy. But there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want an Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve joggers, the link is in the description below. Multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible. If you like the content, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. It definitely, definitely means a lot. Subscribe. Also, I know that there's some people that only watch on YouTube and there's some people that only listen on DSPs, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud. If you do only listen on DSPs or you do listen on DSPs, please subscribe. Please follow. No fan is bigger than the other. You guys are all loved. You guys are all important, and I appreciate you guys. So if you do like the content that you're listening to, whatever DSP you're on, please subscribe. It means a lot. Also, please follow the socials. Follow Instagram. Follow TikTok. I post pretty much daily there. That's where you get longer versions of the reels that I post on YouTube. That's where you are able to probably debate with me faster and get to me faster. And we can go back and forth. Just keep it respectful. And I don't mind you telling me how wrong I am. I don't mind you telling me how much you don't like my takes. Just keep it respectful and we'll go back and forth. I don't mind it. And I love engagement. It means a lot. So subscribe or follow the socials. And until next time, much love.